Welcome to the Alapra Podcast. Seven masses a week and shit on the poor. Wow, what a start, eh? So this is another podcast of Alapra Media. Coming quite hot on the heels of the previous one where I was walking around on my own like a mad yoke, talking to myself about feelings and being a pretentious fucker. But I wanted to do another one because I realized after I finished that podcast, I actually hadn't spoken about some of the things I wanted to talk about, which is a little bit annoying. But the good side is I can do this and I have a bit of free time. And I wanted to use it constructively. Like a lot of people, I guess. It's weird, I get very restless when I'm not doing things, and obviously have free time because usually I'm working on Alapra stuff today on Mondays, but I'm not, because, well, I always am, but for various reasons I haven't done much with that today, and I feel bad when I don't work, so I want to do another podcast because I'm a clown who can't enjoy his free time. And I need to be doing something. And that could be a video that nobody's going to watch, which are some of our videos, not all of them. Or a podcast where I do know that we have listeners, and it's kind of a gratifying thing. Like, I mentioned a Blind Boy podcast, there's 400,000 listeners, or whatever it was, so I'm sure some of you listening already know his podcast, but if you don't, check it out. He said you never walk away from a podcast feeling kind of like stressed. You know, if you're playing video games for a long time, if you are watching TV, you kind of feel bleh, bleh. You know, you kind of feel a little stagnant. But when you listen to a podcast, you always kind of feel energized, like you've actually used that time productively, which is quite a nice feeling, I have to say. And what else can I say about that? Well, even making one feels great because you get to exercise your mouth muscles and keep your cheeks from going fat because you're talking so much or something like that. And on the last podcast, I had some gentle piano music tinkling in the background. I'm going to try and find some music now in the background. Well, you're already listening to it. So I'm doing a Bill Burr by talking about something that has already happened for you, but not for me. So I'm going to try and find some nice background music to go. Maybe not something piano-based, because, you know, mix it up a little bit. Nothing wrong with mixing things up once in a while. And, so today, well, the next podcast. So I said in the previous podcast that the next upload would be around a story, and that I'm going to hold true to that, starting with the next podcast, because today I'm going to talk some shit again. I'm going to ramble about Michael Hartnett, who's a poet from Newcastle West, which is West Limerick. That's my town. He's a man familiar to myself, and I want to talk about that a little bit about his story, and we'll delve into the fabric of my town a little bit more. And if you're not from Newcastle, which you probably aren't, don't worry. I'll try and make it relevant and relatable and interesting and all that. And the reason I mentioned there's going to be a story next week is because I am a man who is trying to write the great American novel. And by that, I mean the great Irish novel, or perhaps the great Spanish novel. I'm trying to write a book, basically, and it's going to be about Spain. Surprise, surprise, about an Irishman in Spain. Surprise, surprise. And an even bigger surprise, it's going to be based on my experiences. It's going to be episodic, which means that, you know, each chapter is going to be connected by virtue of the fact it's going to be the same character, but it's not going to be the same sequence in this overarching story. Well, the overarching story is him the character, the avatar, the person who should represent moi, being, you know, having his adventures in each chapter that are loosely connected by virtue of the fact that he's in the same city, is telling a bigger story, of course, but each chapter is kind of its own unique story, like a TV show that has standalone episodes. My inspiration for this is Samuel Beckett's Kicking Against the Pricks, which I do recommend. I think it's a little known Beckett work. I'm not sure if it's widely known. People generally don't talk about it, I think. I don't think. I found it in my brother's room where I went pilfering books. Of course, karma is a bitch, so he has stolen many books from me, which I shall never see again, probably. And it tells... It's a wonderful book. You know, it's from that generation of writers that could just make you laugh. You know, people are writing in the 20s and the 30s, and you know, those 2 decades where people were surreal and it was farcical, and it was just heavy with detail. And if you can find a copy, I really recommend it, because you're going to fall over, you know, you're going to swoon with love for his turn of phrases, which are marvelous, just absolutely fantastic. And it's a great credit to him, Mr. Beckett, that he's a great novelist as he is a playwright. And having been fortunate enough to see his grave in Paris, it's obvious I'm not alone in thinking that. Of course, you can still see fresh flowers being placed there, I presume, on a regular basis. It's about a guy who's like in university, and then he leaves university, and his life is pretty tragic in a very darkly hilarious way, and dark in a very Irish way. I think Irish sense of humor it can be quite dark, as well as being quite surreal. And he, you know, has like misadventures romantically. He's petty, kind of grievances. He's not a popular guy. And just the way he can capture the essence of a scene in each of those standalone chapters is fantastic, because there's one story early on in the book where he's like with a girl on a hill, and like he's trying to be profound, and he's kind of annoying her by being like trying too hard, but also he's disinterested and he's thinking about like something else. And you know, eventually he abandons her when they run into her ex, and she just stays with the ex, and he like just steals a bike or gets a bike, procures a bike somehow. It's been a while since I've read it, and just like goes tearing down the road. And it's kind of, you know, it's a great character piece, because it's about a character who's like, he's not comfortable in his own skin, and even though he's doing a facsimile of a normal life by courting a girl and being in a picturesque location, his mind is wandering, which can happen to the best of us. And then it's just this kind of pointless action of taking a bike and cycling to nowhere, really. And I think that kind of sums up life sometimes, because I think we all are guilty of doing things that make no sense, just to get away from a situation that we are consciously, or perhaps a little bit unconsciously, uncomfortable with. And this the book I want to write, and I'm Dylan Moran, a great Irish comic who's also very surreal, said, I don't like telling people I'm writing a book when I'm writing it, because I'm taking credit for something I haven't even done yet, which I do agree with. But you know, I like the stories that we've featured in the story time before have been original works, so either by myself or Mary, so it's going to continue in that vein and also give some oxygen to the story time feature, which we haven't uploaded that for a while. So that's kind of been my thinking related to that. It's going to focus, as I mentioned, about Spain. Just the things about Spain I think are quite fascinating. And also the Irish experience here. So there's going to be some stuff here where, you know, you've Irish people come in, they're welcomed by the Spanish king, because one period in one part of our history, it was very uncomfortable to be a Catholic in the country, and he welcomed a lot of Irish immigrants. And it's quite fascinating, because sometimes we do tours telling their story around Madrid, and they were treated sometimes badly by people because they thought they were alcoholics. So that tag has followed us around and dogged us for many a year. There's definitely a feeling of why are these dirty, smelly immigrants coming into our country? But as is often the case, sometimes, there's immigrant stories where people do very well for themselves, and there's a man buried in the center of the city in a church who is like an advisor to the king, wrote a medical book for the navy, and there's other examples of Irish people done good. So I kind of want to link to those kind of stories as well. Stuff like the International Brigade, of course, and even going back, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, to the mythological links between Spain and Ireland. Also things like in Spain, which is a fabulous country. It's a wonderful country full of wonderful people. But there is like a way of expressing yourself which is different from Ireland, and I kind of want to get underneath that, because I think there's an anger there as well, which you could say is true of Ireland as well, because I know people who say like you walk around Ireland, you think everybody looks angry or pissed off. I kind of want to explore that a little bit more, but we'll see. Well, the story, I'm not sure which story I'm gonna start with first, but you'll see next week more about that. But Spain's a great place, and I kind of want to celebrate that a little bit in the book as well. But obviously the whole focus of this podcast is talking about Michael Hartnett. And but before I talk about him, just on cultural watch, if you like paintings, there's a lot of great apps you can download. One I have, they give you a painting every day. And I've just seen one, it's called Dreams, painted in 1896 by Vittorio Matteo Corcas. And it's about a woman who is just sitting on a bench, gazing at you, but she's not actually gazing at you. She's dreaming of something or some place or somebody, and it's startling. So just a great painting. It just really comes alive. Looks like she is almost a real person. It's almost photographic. It reminds me of Sorolla, with the little kind of brushes of light making the whole scene vibrant and full of life. And another one called Two Comedians, by a guy called Edward Hopper, which was painted in 1966, and it's intended as a farewell of sorts, as it mentions here. So him and his wife, when they're in their dotage, were quite sick. He died 2 years after painting it, and she died a year later. And just two of them as actors on a stage, giving their curtain call, for example. And as a turn of phrase, curtain call, it's a bit prosaic, it's a bit cliche, but when it's just given a new life and a new voice in terms of this painting, it's quite fantastic. It really gives you a really poignant feeling in your stomach, and I think it's a really nice painting as well, and done in a very weird style, very kind of, I don't know what kind of style it is. It's kind of very kind of modern style, very kind of blocky characters, and kind of faded colors, so not very similar to the first painting. That I recommended. But apart from that, let's talk about Michael Hartnett. He lived in Madrid. I never knew. Obviously I've been aware of him since he's from my town, but I never knew he actually lived in Madrid, which is quite amazing. He lived in London, settled in Limerick eventually. He was born there, of course, as well, and spent some time in Dublin, which was an interesting period because he knew Patrick Kavanagh, another great Irish poet. An Irish poet with more fame and renown than him, has to be said, and than Michael Hartnett. And he was holding court in the bars, like a lot of poets in Dublin were doing at that time. And there's a great book I read a few years ago about Dublin in the 50s. Now, 50s Ireland has a terrible reputation. I'm not sure if the 50s everywhere had this reputation. I think in America, I know in the 60s you had material culture and the post-war boom, which I think perhaps could have started in the 50s a little bit as well. But in Ireland, at least, it was kind of like seen as a grey drudge, like a slurry, a sludge of just, dominance from the Catholic Church and no creativity and just, very constrictive of the soul. And Patrick Kavanagh wrote a poem basically called The Great Hunger, which is what we call the famine as well, which is another name. But he applies it in the sense of being a farmer and being in rural Ireland and having no chance of finding a woman, which could be because of the location, but also with the Moors at the time, you know, I don't think it'd be, it wasn't exactly swinging 60s, you know, swinging 60s London, in 1950s Ireland, you know. And I think, yeah, so, like, which is also very relevant to, you know, because I know people who've grown up on farms, and one of my friends who used to live here as well, his father was fierce lonely because he had no family and he had to look after the farm. And every weekend or every 2 weekends, he'd go to the neighboring town and, you know, go to a dance hall, which is what they did back then, and try and meet a girl. And he did, obviously, and he married her and had 3 kids or 4 kids. I never remember how many siblings he has. So, you know, they're the kind of poverty of rural life, and not just materially, but socially and spiritually as well, is, you know, something that it was mentioned in Patrick Kavanagh's poem, and I've heard firsthand or secondhand from a friend of mine. Yeah, so Michael Hartnett, there's a statue of him in the town square, kind of standing, kind of gazing into the distance, dreaming of something or finding inspiration. And he has a great line, which is about how he didn't find poetry; poetry found him. And a lot of his poems talk about that as well, especially his Irish poems, which are about reclaiming like an Irish past. And he felt it was a true voice that he should be speaking in, and the muse chose him suddenly to speak Irish. And it was on the stage of the Peacock Theatre that he made this grand announcement. Some people got very irritated by it, other people were indifferent to it, and of course I guess some people supported him as well. But he's a fascinating poet because he just, the things he writes about are everyday, they're commonplace, but like any true great work of art, they're just elevated by something, and he knew how to elevate things. There's a poem called Death of an Irish Woman, and it's glorious. It's about like being ignorant in the sense she ate monotonous food, and it goes on like this. She sang songs that nobody knew anymore, so she was a woman completely out of step, out of place, in her time. And it's just such a very moving poem. And he writes another poem as well about his father, how he gives him a kiss, and it was our last kiss, he says, and also our first kiss. And that reminds me of Seamus Heaney's poem as well about death and how they, you know, take this tragic situation and make it very relatable and very touching. And that's not an easy thing to do, because you can write a poem about death and it can sound very cliched or hackneyed or just very morbid or very just grand, you know, that people are overextending their images or their connections. But this is very restrained, very soulful, and very sad. So they're very good at evoking those kind of situations, those kind of emotions. And in that poem about the death of an Irish woman, yeah, just a whole litany of kind of things that have passed, and it's very moving. He says here, for example, she was a summer dance at the crossroads. She was a card game where a nose was broken. She was a song that nobody sings. She was a house ransacked by soldiers. She was a language seldom spoken. She was a child's purse full of useless things. And it's kind of interesting he says that as well, because he is a guy who is known for knowing lots of useless and arcane things. And there are so many ways you can look at this. I guess I said she's out of step with her time. But again, we all are eventually. Everything passes, but also things remain in the ether, in the atmosphere. And in the previous podcast, I mentioned Laurie Lee's book, which is called Village Christmas and Other Notes on the English Year. I didn't give that name in the previous podcast. And he talks about loving those small things, the gutters on the tops of houses, the way the rain falls in certain directions, and how, you know, there's a Neolithic man was found near his house, and his friend, who's a dentist, said he must be related to you. You have the same kind of teeth. You know, so these things from the past, and he mentions these things from the past that pass and are no more. And when you have an example of something that's an outlier, that doesn't exist anymore, but except in one person, and everything else has moved on. Yes, there's a tragedy to it, but also as part of a glorious past that, well, maybe not glorious, but a real past, and that gives it a lot of value, I think. And again, you know, he wrote lots of books, obviously. One book, my first book of his actually was basically a B-sides of poetry, so poetry that wasn't published. I think it's a fascinating concept, really, having a B-sides book. I never knew you could do that, you know, with books or with poems. Must be more common than I think. And that's where the opening line of the podcast comes from. Seven masses a week and shit in the poor. And it's a pop at sanctimonious people who go to mass but aren't good people, or who don't live Christian ethics, you know, so then actually living the word of God, even though they kind of pontificate and show a face at the local church every week. And he writes a poem about a blacksmith who used to work. His forge was in Maiden Street, and his niece or his granddaughter, I can't remember the relation. As you can probably guess, last two podcasts have been chronic. I can't remember anything in terms of people's names or things like that, but she was in my class, and he wrote a very touching poem for him, where he's methodically going about his business, you know, very, great constancy, banging the iron and making things, which is the rhythm of a small town, which and sounds that don't ring out anymore, but again, speak to a previous time, to a time that has gone. But Main Street is interesting in that sense as well. And I have to stop saying the word "it is interesting" or the phrase "it is interesting," but or think of synonyms. But it is fascinating. See what I did there? Because there's like until quite recently, until like the 70s, when you know Michael Hartnett was walking around there, you used to have attached houses and people, laborers, usually like fishermen and peasants, basically characters from another century almost, were living there, and obviously those houses are gone now, but there more than in other parts of the town, like I mentioned in the previous podcast, things haven't really changed that much there, but there more than anywhere else you could see for a very long time older examples of older forms of life, you know, something more historical or whatever. So he's a minor poet. A lot of stories going around about him. I mean, he used to stay at my grandmother's house sometimes, once or twice when he was like too drunk to find his way home. There's even a story of like in France, they're on a bus tour, and in the morning the bus driver expired, unfortunately, in his room. And once that was known, he went up and took the books, apparently. But then again, you never know if these stories are true or not. But what is true is that every year there's a festival called Aigshe, celebrating Irish poetry and celebrating his life. And it's a wonderful thing. If you've seen the movie Philomena, which is another Irish tale, the woman who was the inspiration for that story, she was there in this year's or last year's iteration of it. And I've even heard stories, I'm not sure if this was him, I think it is him, because we had a lot of poets in the Castle West, believe it or not. And he was doing a reading in the town, and a woman came up to him afterwards and said, I know what you were talking about in that poem. And I think he looked her up and down and said, well, that makes one of us, because I had no fucking idea what I was on about. So again, it's a great story. Who knows if that's actually true. I'll finish this by looking for another by reading another poem by him, so you can get a sense of what he was like. And this is the poem that he, it's called A Farewell to English. This is the poem he wrote basically explaining why he was going to start in Irish and start writing in Irish. And this is it. It's called A Farewell to English, and this is an excerpt, so it's not the full poem. It is, this road is not new. I am not a maker of new things. I cannot hew out of the vacuum cleaner minds the sense of serving dead kings. I am nothing new. I am not a lonely mouth trying to chew a niche for culture in the clergy cluttered south. But I will not see great men go down who walked in rags from town to town, finding English a necessary sin, the perfect language to sell pigs in. I've made my choice and leave with little weeping. I've come with meager voice to court the language of my people. And there's a lot of elegance in that, because I mentioned Patrick Avenant before, and he was poor from a life of writing poetry, and it was made clear to Michael Hartnett that he was never going to become a great, you know, or a wealthy man from his work. But still, it was a calling, it was a vocation, it was a lifelong devotion, something he couldn't do. And, you know, he died not too long ago, really, in the grand scheme of things. But when he did die, there were a lot of articles about him in Irish newspapers, of course, and from people who knew him. And there's a great story about how before he died, the writer of one obituary said, I met him and he just looked at me. He was completely drunk and he said, they're all written. All the poems are written. So it's like this psychological thing where my work is done. I can pass on. And Shane McGowan, I'm reminded of Shane McGowan, the lead singer of the Pogues, by that story as well, because he could be often found wandering the streets of London completely out of his head with drink. But, you know, still finding time to give money to poor people and kind of live his life the way he wanted to live his life, you know. So these two, you know, certain Irish writers, not all of them, I don't want to perpetuate a stereotype, but touched by genius, touched by alcohol as well. But and then even in their drunken stupor, maintaining this literary and kind of romantic side of themselves that they were truly living as well. It wasn't just an affectation. It was a way of life that he lived until the end. So he's a little known poet, not as big as he should have been or could have been. But if you ever find the time to visit West Limerick or to find this poetry online, I would really recommend checking it out, because it speaks about real things with wonderful integrity. So there, that's the end of this podcast. Find us on Patreon, YouTube, Facebook. No, actually not Facebook. Twitter. LAPRA1 is our Twitter handle, and we'll be back. I'll be back next week with another episode, and that will be, as I mentioned, the chapter or the story. Next episode of a story. Something story-based anyway, and you can look forward to that. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll be talking to you soon.